It's the 39th annual Marion Thompson Wright Lecture Series planned for the campus of Rutgers Newark. And this year's theme is The Erotic as Power, Sexuality and the Black Experience. And joining us is the new Associate Director of the Clement A. Price Institute on Ethnicity, Culture, and the Modern Experience, Salamisha Tillett.
Hi.
Great to see you.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
We're excited that you're here. I'm not sure you're aware, but the person who, along with Giles Wright, started this whole thing many years ago, Dr. Clem Price, was really the first person to welcome me to this city more than 20 years ago. And, of course, everybody, when they talk about Clem, would say, he was like one of my best friends. Mm-hmm. But almost everybody claimed that. So
this
lecture series is near and dear to my heart. And now you're one of the organizers of this year's event. And tell us about this exciting topic, The Erotic as Power, Sexuality, and the Black Experience. Why did you choose this?
Well, partly because, MTW, or the Marion Thompson Wright Lecture, is such a sacrosanct institution here in Newark, as you've pointed out. And when I was sitting in the history department this summer, and I was looking around the room at the posters, and the posters of this event are like as canonical as the event itself in many ways, one of the themes that stood out to me that was absent was sexuality, actually. And so I thought, what an interesting and compelling topic to think about at this moment. And, you know, we wanted to bring in a group of academics and artists who have been really questioning and probing and pushing both academia but also our larger culture into thinking about how race and sexuality and race and gender kind of operate in tandem with each other. So it was an opportunity to really think through complicated questions about identity and African-American identity in particular, but also do it with a really interdisciplinary edge. So we have poets and kind of playwrights, sociologists, and filmmakers all coming in contact with each other, in conversation with each other, to explore these issues and how what it means to them as people, but also what it means to us as a country.
Salamisha Tillett not only is the new associate director at the Price Institute and the lead organizer of this year's Marion Thompson Wright Lecture Series, but she's also the founding director of the new Arts Social Justice Initiative at Express Newark on the campus of RU Newark, a professor of African American and African Studies and Creative Writing at Rutgers Newark, and the co-founder and president of A Long Walk Home, the Chicago nonprofit that uses the arts to end violence against women and girls. You come with a very, very impressive background to Newark. And so, obviously, your first delve into the Marion Thompson Wright Lecture Series, just how exciting has it been for you to know that you're bringing in scholars about a topic that really means something to you?
I'm really excited. You know, I'm a resident of Newark. I've been living here for 10 years. And so I feel like I've been able to benefit from the scholars that the Institute and Clem in particular have brought over the years. So just in terms of my own knowledge and my own kind of intellectual credibility, it's grown because of this lecture. So, it's really exciting. And part of the reason why it's especially exciting is because, you know, I feel like with any theme and with any topic, you really have to figure out, you know, who the audience is. And I feel like there are multiple audiences that this topic appeals to. It would appeal to people who have been attending for many years and interested in African American studies and what are the new trends and questions and theories within the field. And then people who are interested in Black sexuality, Black LGBTQ issues, and just maybe some people may be interested in like film and poetry. So there's so many different audiences that we're hoping to attract to this lecture. So it's been exciting to figure out who those audiences are and how do you reach them. And I think that's been my biggest challenge and also hopefully the most rewarding, you know, like hopefully the room will be really diverse and eclectic and speak to and embody the spirit of the theme.
You have quite a terrific list of speakers and performers that are a part of the 39th annual Marion Thompson Wright Lecture Series. Can you touch upon some of them for us?
Yes. Well, we have Professor E. Patrick Johnson, who's delivering the keynote, and his keynote is Are We Not Family? Sexuality, Citizenship, and politics in the new Black South. And E. Patrick Johnson is both an ethnographer. He was the head of communications at Northwestern for a very long time. But he also is a playwright and an actor. And so for years, he went throughout the American South interviewing Black gay men, and he created a performance called, a book, and then a performance called Sweet Tea. And so he was interviewing multiple generations of Black gay men in the South about their experiences and their identity and how they navigated a terrain, a geographical terrain that we may think of as hostile to being Black and gay. But these individuals have really complicated stories and complicated lives and really important lessons to teach some of us, or all of us, I would think. So we're excited to have E. Patrick talk about old work and new work. He's really expanded this to think about Black lesbian women in the South as well. The filmmaker is best known for Watermelon Woman, Cheryl Dunier, but she's been doing a lot of exciting projects. Most recently, she's been directing for Queen Sugar, which is on OWN, so she's coming. Alexis Pauline Gums is a really interesting poet, writer, scholar. She will be speaking. And then Marcus Hunter, who is a sociologist, he's very well known for his work on Du Bois, W.E.B. Du Bois, but he also has a new book that he co-authored that's called Chocolate Cities, that's thinking about how Black people navigate different geographies in the United States. So it's a really exciting mix. And I haven't seen all of these people speak at the same time. Some of them I've never seen speak at all. So it's going to be exciting for me, but hopefully exciting for everyone who's in the audience as well.
Salamation, you're talking about, you know, major universities and people representing the film industry, poets and that. I'm always impressed at the lineup that the NTW can bring in. It's just a testament to how successful this program has been through the years.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's so many appeals. I mean, a large part of the appeal, of course, was Clem and his presence like the generosity of spirit, but also his intellectual rigor. And so I think for me, it's, you know, an opportunity to kind of continue that legacy and then also cultivate, you know, different, you know, similar networks and different networks. But I do think it's really quite a prestigious lecture. And what I love about it is, like, the spirit really is about the community. You know, like, I've attended different universities. I've taught at different universities. And to have such a kind of culminating lecture that's really about the city of Newark, the people who live here, and being in conversation with them is really kind of just something that is special to me. And so I feel like that's also part of what makes it prestigious. You know, it's not just who's coming, but where it is and who's in attendance, to me, makes it as prestigious as, you know, any of the keynotes that we have any year.
You mentioned it's an interesting time to talk about sexuality and the fact that this hasn't been a topic as of yet. A lot of people are afraid, I think, to talk about sexuality, especially in public. Isn't that the case, too?
Yes, it's true. I think you'll see a generational divide on this. You know, like young people are not that, you know, uncomfortable, both expressing it in diverse ways as well as talking about it, at least in maybe urban spaces or coastal cities. You know, people may have the privilege to be more expressive with who they are. But I do think that it is a taboo subject. And I think when it comes to ideas and concepts of race, it's also very complicated because sexuality and stereotypes about African-Americans as hypersexual have been used in service of really horrible institutions like slavery and segregation and other forms of racism. So sexuality is something that has been used against African-Americans in historic ways, as well as it's a space of fluidity, it's a space of freedom, it's a space of self-expression. So those two things kind of come, they work against each other at times, and I think we're going to have, like, really interesting conversations. So sometimes people think sexuality, a friend of mine was like, you know, in the age of Trump, like, you know, there's so many pressing issues. And I feel like, well, this is definitely a pressing issue, partly because, you know, the current administration uses stereotypes around sexuality to disenfranchise people. But also it's just the way people live their lives. And then if we care about how people exist in this era or any historical era, sexuality is very important to that kind of identity and the way in which people see themselves.
You know, also on this WBGO Journal, we have a feature that we just heard about Nina Simone and the power of women and who battle struggles and abuse and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, when we're talking about this era and we're talking about, you know, how women are viewed and the Me Too movement, what would you like people to be talking about coming into this and then going out of the 39th annual MTW?
Well, I don't know if you brought up Nina Simone because, you know, I'm working on a book on Nina Simone, but the February 21st is her birthday.
That I knew, but I didn't know that you were working on a book.
Oh, yeah, I'm working on a book on Nina Simone. That was a perfect person for you to ask me about. Yes, I'm working on a book on Mississippi Goddamn and Nina Simone.
Well, the reason that we brought it up is that George Street Playhouse has, you know, the new musical.
Exactly.
You know, Little Girl Blue.
Little Girl Blue. And then there's an exhibit in Express Newark. In the front, my sister and I, who's a photographer, we took a trip to her home this summer, and I wrote a piece about her childhood home. So there's a lot of Nina Simone energy right here. But speaking of Nina Simone, you know, one of the things I think is interesting about Nina Simone in relationship to this topic, actually, is, you know, Nina Simone was very good friends with James Baldwin and Lorraine Hansberry, and she too was a black queer artist in the 1960s, and so. It's oftentimes, you know, she's seen as a race woman or she's seen as like a proto-feminist, but also her sexuality was really complicated, but also she lived in an era in which that couldn't be foregrounded the way that she lived it. And so I think when we're thinking about recovering stories and recovering histories, figures like Lorraine Hansberry, James Baldwin, Nina Simone from the 60s are really important for this conversation today. And the theme of our the MTW comes from an Audre Lorde essay, another figure that was very important in the 70s and 80s. And she has an essay called The Uses of the Erotic. So for me, there's a way in which those figures, but Nina Simone in particular, have animated my own political and intellectual interest in thinking about sexuality more forthrightly.
And as people are leaving the MTW, what do you want them to be talking about?
Oh, I guess I want them to be talking about what they've learned, what they didn't know before coming into this moment, how being in the room with all of these different artists and academics and audience members has changed their way of seeing something, and they could take that energy and that excitement and really try to figure out how we can continue to make our city and our country more equitable for everyone.
Just the fact that you're now the new associate director of the Price Institute and you had the opportunity to know Clem Price, did that make it even more special for you to get this new role?
Yeah, more special and then also more pressure. I want to get it right out of the gate. And yes, definitely more special. And just out of, I guess, a deep admiration for him. And
what was it about him that made him special in your mind?
Well, I think the fact that the way you talked about how everyone felt so special, that everyone felt so, that he genuinely cared about who they were in that moment and beyond, that's a very rare trait and one that we really need more of as we're living in more very complicated times today. So, yeah, I feel like, and then also just the idea that, you know, from his vision of this, and I've understood this more from being at Price and working with Mark and Laura, you know, it really was about having these very kind of like rarefied individuals be in conversation with New Yorkers and really have this exchange and this energy. And that just be a Saturday in February on any year. And so that to me is a really beautiful model and something that I'm not only indebted to him, but I'm also very honored to continue the legacy.
We're speaking here with Salamisha Tillett, who is the Associate Director of the Clement A. Price Institute on Ethnicity, Culture, and the Modern Experience, and the 39th Annual Marion Thompson Wright Lecture Series that is coming up on Saturday, February 16th, on the Paul Robeson Campus Center. What would Marion Thompson Wright add to the conversation about this topic?
Oh, I don't know. That's a really good question. I don't know. I guess I would hope that, you know, part of your earlier question was about the way in which we think of women and women's leadership today. And I think that she was such a pioneering figure, that I hope that she would see that this is in conversation, even if it's kind of like slightly different, you know, slightly off key from maybe her own work, that this is part of that legacy, but also a very feminist spirit that's behind this. And so I feel like in that way, we're reimagining what citizenship looks like, we're reimagining what leadership looks like, and we're also kind of thinking through like how gender and race and sexuality operate in tandem with each other. So I think that would be one way of, you know, hopefully she would appreciate that.
Tell us a little bit more about A Long Walk Home.
Thank you. Well, A Long Walk Home is an organization that I co-founded with my sister in 2003, very long time ago. And when we were doing this work, we were focused on using art to empower survivors, sexual assault survivor. I'm a sexual assault survivor myself, and my sister started photographing my healing experience in the late 90s. And so we turned that into a multimedia performance, which is in the spirit of For Colored Girls and Tezake Shange's groundbreaking play. Ours is called Story of a Rape Survivor. And so for years, we'd go around to different college campuses, really talking about and performing for audiences the story of being a rape victim and becoming a survivor of that trauma, my story of survival from that trauma. And then we kind of expanded our programming to think about how young people are really impacted by these issues of sexual violence and dating violence, as well as other forms of violence like racism and gun violence. And so we work with young people, particularly young girls and women, to activate their voices and express their vision for social change and really empower them to be artists, activists in their community and in their city around a matrix of issues, but really ending violence at large.
I invite you to check out Salamisha Tillett on YouTube. You can hear some of her talks. Very powerful stuff. Obviously, you do realize you're a role model, right?
I mean, I don't know. it's like one of those people. Like, I mean, yes. I realize that I have impact on people. Sometimes, hopefully, it's mostly positive. So, yeah.
And have you had a chance just to take that all in and realize that you have changed the lives of young women?
No. Well, that's so nice of you. I hear that and I take it in. And but sometimes with this work, like, I feel like I've been chosen to do it. And so I appreciate the expression of gratitude. But I don't assume it, and I'm not doing it for that, I guess is what I'm saying. I'm doing it just because I don't want people to experience this trauma, girls or boys, men or women, and whatever I can do to ensure that either someone who has experienced it can find their voice and heal or prevent someone from experiencing it. That's what I feel like I'm put on earth to do. So that's how I think about it.
The Marion Thompson Wright Lecture Series has always had a touch of jazz connected to it.
Yeah.
The entertainment by the Bradford Hayes Trio again this time around. But not just the music, the feeling is always had a special connection to jazz, this lecture series. Do you agree?
Yeah. I mean, last year the theme was music, quite literally. But yes. And jazz as a kind of democratic experience, right? Democratic expression. So definitely. I definitely think this is a jazz-oriented event, yes.
So now we know that you're writing a book about Nina Simone, but if you had an opportunity to go back in time and maybe have three people in the room with you to really have a conversation about some of the topics that are going on in today's world, who would the three people that you would select to come into that room with you?
I mean, I guess because there's probably many people, but I'm actually, like, the three people I named, I would like to be in a room with James Baldwin, Lorraine Hansberry, and Nina Simone and examine and be present as they were working out their interpersonal dynamics, but also as they were different artists, and they really, really were trying to figure out how to use their vision and their art and their voice to save America and to save themselves, and just to be in the presence of people who were ahead of their time then and who are so important to us now. I could only imagine. I mean, I learned so much from them today that I could only have learned so much more from them back then.
So how does one who has all these positions and all these groups and find time to write a book?
I don't know. My editors are probably asking the same question because I'm working on two projects, actually. I'm working on a book on The Color Purple that comes out this fall, and then Nina Simone comes out after that. So,
now,
yeah.
Tell us, you can't just throw Color Purple out to me without telling me a little bit more.
Yeah, that's a coming-of-age book, as we know, by Alice Walker in 1982. I won the Pulitzer, and it had various lives. It was an Oscar-nominated film and a Tony Award-winning musical on Broadway. And so I'm both interested in the book itself and how it's been adapted, but also my own journey to The Color Purple and finding the language of feminism and finding the language of equality when I read that book at 16. And then the third thing I guess I would say is I feel like The Color Purple is such a prophetic text. So many of the issues that Walker was exploring then, you know, to think about the question in the age of Me Too, you know, she anticipated and broke such sacred ground by talking about and dealing with issues of sexual violence then. And now that's given us the vocabulary and given us a framework to think both about how we treat survivors and the possibility of forgiveness in the character of Celie with the character of Albert. So I think there's so much. It's such a rich text. It's a book that is one of the most important American novels ever written, and it lives on because of its beauty, but also its potency and its prophetic nature. So I'm writing about all that.
I certainly hope you saw Cynthia Erivo as Celie.
Yes, and I have. And I've been able to interview really exciting people like Danny Glover and Oprah Winfrey, who've been part of the various versions of The Color Purple, too.
Well, the recent revival that starred Cynthia Erivo, I can give you just how it impact my daughter. My daughter's 26.
Okay.
But she took me to The Color Purple as a birthday present, and she had just seen Hamilton, and she was Hamilton crazy.
Wow.
So at the intermission, I looked over at her and I said, "Well, what do you think?"
Mm.
And she said, "Dad, I have to be honest. It's better."
Wow.
Than she went to see Cynthia perform four times in the show before it was over. With all different people playing.
Yeah, you know, the different characters, like Nettie and Shug. And, yes, go on.
Exactly. There were four different Shugs, during the whole time. But she just was really, really amazed by the performance and took her new husband to see it. And he became a huge fan of the show, too.
Yeah.
So powerful. So I'm so glad that that's something that touches you and that motivates you to write.
Yeah, it's true. And then just to think about The Color Purple in relationship to the theme of MTW, Alice Walker's book was, and then the movie, were really, really groundbreaking in their representations of Black women and women, but Black women loving each other sexually and spiritually and emotionally. So that was in the 80s, and now it seems like you go to the Broadway musical and it's widely accepted, but when she was doing that in the 80s, it was really, 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 really ahead of its time.
So as we wrap up this edition here on the WBGO Journal, Salamecia Tillett, it's wonderful to finally meet you.
And yes, same here, because I listen. Now you know I'm a Nina lover, a jazz lover. So
yeah. Are there any other jazz artists that you're particularly fond of?
Yeah. I mean, that's a great... I mean, I feel like I'm going to sound so, corny and... it's hard not to like being from Newark, Sarah, Sassy, but Ella. But also, yeah. I mean, I don't know. We could talk about this more. I'm just trying to think of the various artists. My son is named Sidney after Sidney Poitier and Sidney Bechet. So,
wow.
Yeah. So we're...
And
yeah.
How old is he?
He's three.
He's three.
Yeah, so...
And
so.
Right, so right now, that won't mean anything to him.
I try to say it, but yeah, he's like... Yeah, no, I try to show pictures and listen to music and, you know, and film clips, but yeah, he's three, so... But.
And what a wonderful time, three. four to me is the most amazing age
for
them because They're out of diapers for sure.
Yeah.
They're definitely their own people by then, yeah. But they still need you.
Yeah. Well, I have a 6-year-old, so yes, a girl.
Girl.
So I see that people can be out of diapers.
All right, now, so let me show you. You have no time now.
No, I know. I didn't want to bring them in.
We were going through this about without two children being involved now, writing to children and all
yeah.
this. You are an amazing person, and we appreciate you joining us here for a talk about the 39th Annual Marion Thompson Wright Lecture Series that will take place on the campus of Rutgers Newark at the Paul Robeson Campus Center, and it is all on Saturday, February 16th, starting early in the morning and going through the late afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.